Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Walt Harris, the Food and Drug Administration's Chief Operating Officer and Acting CIO. Walt, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with some basics. You've been actually acting CIO since April 2013, so more than a year now. So just discuss your background a little.
Well, while each organization is unique in its own set of challenges, I bring to FDA more than 20 years of leadership and management experience from the private sector and in the federal government. I've managed at the executive level in the areas of public health operations, healthcare operations, and information technology. I have led organization development for large and small organizations. So going back to your question of how CIO and COO are similar or different, the positions are, they share many similarities. In each, I've established the same governance principles by empowering the customers and centers and office directors and the IT staff to come together as an agency in decision making as it relates to IT. The processes we put into play are fully transparent regarding processes, decisions, budget allocation, et cetera. And there's a governing body that we feel that has become a bit more joined over the last year than in the past. Additionally, we've been able to implement a service-based model that has been, you know, was tough putting in, but has been well received. We have deputies now focused on infrastructure and software development and operations, while we have a second deputy that's focused on, you know, the business activities around the customers themselves, both internal and external, and what they expect of our services. And so this structure, in my mind, offers a greater transparency and a better alignment of business needs and resources to the customers.
In some ways, being the COO and the CIO is good because you don't have to ask for permission or ask for help. You can almost make that decision from an operational perspective. Does that make things a little bit easier as well?
Well, it makes it even easier if I have buy-in from the customers across the agency. So we've established, again, a governance structure that allows everyone to participate in the decision-making process, not just the CIO or the COO, but allows our customers to also play in the decision-making process.
So talk a little bit about that governance structure, if you could.
We have a CIO council that is composed of or comprised of members from all across the organization from each center. Of course, our technical managers and directors are also sit on this board. Then you also have the chief health informatics officer who chairs the board or co-chairs the board with our CIO. And so this board does focus on investments to make sure we're making the right decisions. We also focus on maximizing our investments to assure that we don't have a lot of duplication across the agency. So it's a pretty good forum that allows us all to know what it is we're looking at, what the needs are, how we plan to invest, and how to maximize investments across the agency.
And how does that move up to the bigger HHS level?
So the CIO Council at FDA reports up to a senior leadership council within FDA. And, of course, our technology council also mirrors in many ways the HHS council, and we report up to that. So we have various members from within the OIMT organization that sits on various boards at the department level of HHS. And we do take lots of overarching guidance from the HHS CIO. There are lots of measures and performance measures that we have to adhere to that are pretty much set by Frank Bateman as the CIO of HHS. And so we plug nicely into that.
When it comes to the bureau level or vice versa, when I talk to the bureau level CIOs like you and we talk about moving up, there's a lot more collaboration, a lot more communication happening because of this enterprise-wide push for shared services and the like. It's good to see that it's kind of not just being flowed down, but it's also flowing back up.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about the status of the permanent CIO. As I talked about the early part of the conversation, you've been acting for more than a year when the former CIO, Eric Paraxilis, left. Give me just a sense, what's the status of that permanent CIO position?
Yeah, with the loss of Eric, that was a great loss, but it also gave us a chance to look at the organization and perform a deep dive assessment on how it was structured and the value add it was providing to the agency of FDA. When I took over the role of acting CIO, I wanted to make sure that I took time to assess how IT was doing, how did it work with leadership, how did it work with our customers. And so we wanted to determine what our full capabilities were as a value add to the agency. So I took my time over the last year. We've met with customers. We've talked to all the IT staff, both high level and working level. We've talked to customers at the high level and working levels and shared those findings with everyone. From there, we created what I consider a more robust structure that consists of four primary components. Of course, you have the chief information security officer, you have the director for technology delivery, you have the director for customer service, and then you have the director of the informatics area, which is scientifically based. It's also innovation as well. And so those boxes connect quite well together. Now, the relationship between the FDA CIO and the informatics director is a peer level position that report to the COO. The reason for that is we want to assure continuity that we're taking care of the business and administrative systems, as well as feeding the requirements for the scientific needs at FDA. And so that's how the reason we've taken this much time to get FDA's organizational structure for IT the way it is, we took our time and really lined it up nicely so that in the future, when we do have the CIO selected, which will be very soon, this individual, he or she, can come in and see a stabilized structure with work plans, with a strategy, with partnerships that are kind of already built. They will have to come in and strengthen that and build on that versus having kind of a hodgepodge of functions all over the place, not logically formed up, that will make good sense to deliver proper products and services to the agency. So this is why it's taken so long.
All right, so you gave me the ubiquitous soon in government, which also gets my, you know, cockles raised when I hear about, you know, new CIO. A week, a month, a year, any sense you can provide?
I'd say far less than 90 days.
All right, far less than 90. Very good. I will definitely follow up with your folks as we get closer. Not that I want to see you out of position, sir, but, you know, you can only wear two hats for so long. I imagine you'd like to get back to your so-called day job. When you talk about the structure, what was the reason you decided to relook at the structure of the CIO? Was something not working?
The driver was customers didn't really know who to go to for what services. And besides just doing a structural change with the organization, we've also created service catalogs that breaks all of our services down to 61 lines or so. And now the customers know exactly what we offer them by way of services. And so it took a combination of restructuring the actual boxes and wire diagrams and then putting into place a allocation model that really lays out the services we provide to the entire agency. And it allows us to clearly articulate to the customers what we're providing them by services. But more importantly, it also gives them a better education and informs them of what they're using by way of services. So their bills map to how we charge them. And so that was important to lay all these things out. So a year in the government is a short period of time to change something this massive.
61 business lines seems like an awful lot. Does it come across to you as that's a lot, or?
It's everything from infrastructure to customer service and help desk to innovative activities where we create pilots within a lab. And so it's a far range of services that we want to just really provide to the customer a clear view of the range of services we're offering them from an IT perspective.
And are they enjoying that new view? I mean, are they going to the catalog and picking one from column A and one from column B? You know, as necessary, they're not just doing it haphazardly, but as they say, we have this need. Wow, look how easy it is now to find a way to fulfill that need.
Yeah, correct. And it's not really the buffet line. It's really more of the, here is what we're spending our money on as an agency. Let's get together and find out if these are the right things to be spending our funds on as an agency. And then there are those center-specific requests for services that we can then talk about in a separate lane. And so it makes it easier to dialogue on how we're making the total investments across IT in the agency.
Your office, just real quick, you talked about the setup of it, the different kind of deputy CIOs. I'm not sure if that's the term you use, but that's where they kind of fall into. How big is your office? How many vendors versus how many federal employees? And what was your IT budget in 2013?
Well, the budget piece of it is a little sensitive, but we can tell you that we have about 300 to 400 federal IT staff. We don't know the full number of contractors because we're going through a process to figure out this out now. For example, we want to know the difference between what we should be delivering and services we should be purchasing. And I think that helps us to balance out meeting the needs of our clients. One example would be if we decide that it is much more effective that we go to cloud services, that would be one yet another service that the government employees won't focus on. We maybe would buy that service, but then that gives us the ability to focus on all those other important things for the agency. So it's kind of hard to give you the exact numbers of that, but we're really focused on how well we utilize the current resources we have. And where it makes sense to buy services, we do buy services. Where it makes sense that we would build and operate the services, then we build and operate the services.
You know, a lot of CIOs will say, you know, 2-to-1, 3-to-1 vendors to government employees is a good ratio. Others say, I want a 1-to-1. Do you have any sense of that direction?
Well, I think that would be driven by the needs. I mean, I think there will be cases to where we may not have the bench strength to build a new mobility platform, and it may be much more effective that we buy the services expertise to build up that line. And remember, we consider some contract staff as augmented staff to get us on our feet so that we can provide more services as government and FTE. So I would want to see our ratio grow more on the government side than contracting, but we do need our skilled contract partners to build some of these new innovative ideas and approaches that we're planning.
All right, very nice. Well, let's take a quick break. My guest today is Walt Harris, the Food and Drug Administration's Chief Operating Officer and Acting Chief Information Officer. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Walt Harris, the Food and Drug Administration's Chief Operating Officer and Acting CIO. Now, Walt, before break, we're talking a little bit about the makeup of your staff and the reorganization that's been going on, and eventually a new CIO will relieve you of some of your duties. But one of the reasons why we are talking today, beyond the fact that this is a fascinating conversation and you guys seem to be making a lot of progress, tags back to a blog you wrote in July about the changes you've made over the last 7 months. And one of the big changes is a new Office of Information Management and Technology. Talk a little bit about that new office. You talked a lot about the new organization you set up, but give me a little bit more about that and how it relates back to maybe the informatics chief as well.
So over the past 7 months, we as I stated earlier, we have reorganized the Office of Information Management into a more stable structure. But one of the more important features that we created was the Office of the Chief Informatics Officer. We hired FDA's first Chief Health Informatics Officer, Dr. Taha Kashout, to promote and develop innovative enterprise solutions and to identify opportunities for transparency and the availability of FDA's public health data. You may have heard that he was one of the masterminds behind or engineers behind the creation of OpenFDA. OpenFDA allows us to share commonly understood information with the general public, and they have the ability to then create tools. Researchers, scientific technologists have the ability to extract this information and build their own tools to manipulate the data in the formats that helps them to resolve problems beyond FDA. So we think we've done that. The other piece of it is Dr. Taha is also focused on other innovative needs such as cloud enablement and big data, open data, high-performance computing, the next-generation genome sequencing. So we felt that there was a critical need to have a structure in OIMP that has a strong delivery person, which is the CIO, who knows all the wires, wheels, and has all the strategic lines for IT needs. But we also felt it was just as important to have a strong scientific personality involved in our process so that the scientific part to the agency, their needs are met. I mean, most people think that FDA is just an investigative or inspectorate, but it has a huge responsibility for scientific work at FDA. And so we felt that technology should support both the administrative and business sides as well as the scientific side. So that's why we created this current structure.
Now, I want to go back to OpenFDA in a second. Before I do that, now previously, your previous CIO wore both hats in. He was a CIO and he was a chief informatics officer. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So you made the change because you realized just how big the two jobs are, or was it just a matter of finding that right person is pretty tough and there are not a lot of them out there?
Oh, no, clearly it was a huge job, and we had a very good skill in Dr. Paraskis. He had the ability, believe it or not, to connect with the technologies as well as the science communities, and it was just a huge job. I feel that we can give it more individualized attention if we had a mastermind behind the science piece and a mastermind behind the IT services needs. And I think this new structure allows us to do that. But the third piece that we focused on besides the technology and delivery area is the business and customer assurance area, which covers your field-based services, desktop support, a large range of collaboration tools. And so we feel that dividing up the areas this way does help us to really meet the needs of many requirements across FDA.
Going back to the scientific piece for a second, as you said, a lot of people think of FDA as they do investigations or inspections, but there's a lot of scientific. From a technology perspective, how do you, as the in your office, as both the CIO and now this chief informatics, how do you support that need for scientific technology? Because sometimes they have a much different need than your day-to-day business technology.
Absolutely. High-performance computing, scientific computing, those areas are critical to FDA's program offices and centers giving proper information and data that's been scientifically studied and has the nuances of, required for scientific-based decisions to happen. And so we feel strongly that the scientific piece, and we're very confident that the scientific focus from Dr. Taha's Lane does give them the attention and support they need to have scientific computing be just as important as administrative IT services. And so these two lanes, now, they are required to work together. They can't work totally separate. Their needs they provide services to both sides. But again, to have a high concentration of an individual with the skills to know and understand the scientific needs and an individual who knows and understands those standard IT needs are important. And for them to collaborate together really is the key to this work.
And eventually when you name a new CIO, are you going to be then the referee if there's any disagreements or if they need to kind of make sure that both needs are being taken care of properly? Because sometimes, as you probably all know, the scientific guys want open data, open systems, open technology, and the IT guy says, no, we have to have security. It has to be based on standards, and you just can't plug anything into the network. And then the two, you know, they come to loggerheads.
That's right. And I think less of a referee, more of a relationship building entity for both. I think that the organization would appreciate the fact that, for example, again, we found Dr. Taha. He has a very open mind. He knows technology, but he also knows science. I believe if we find the right IT leader, that individual would know there are ways to work things through that you can think outside the box, but stay inside the rules and still meet the needs of all of our customers.
All right. I'm looking forward to meeting your new CIO. So I know 90 days or less. So we're looking forward to that. Talk about the evolution of this office that's coming up. I know it's new. It's only been around for 7 months. But where do you see it going? What's your strategic vision?
Well, OIMT, together with the IT leaders and the centers, I believe would transform our IT operations to maximize the investments, to minimize the redundancy, to streamline IT, enhance customer service while lowering IT costs to the agency. I mean, we continue to seek opportunities to identify and tackle issues, improve communications across functional lines, and fully capitalize on the expertise of our talented staff. I see it going into a fundamental change of how we support the agency's mission, primarily to increase transparency. That has been the key to the success of all the actions we've taken to date, is providing a transparent mechanism for the things we do to support the agency by way of IT. I think we spoke earlier about the IT services cost allocation model that, again, includes the service catalog and identifies many of the cost drivers for IT services. That was the key eye-opener for all the things we've done over the last year that got our partnerships across the centers to be fairly strong. So the evolution of taking away the black box approach to charging for IT and making it more of a phone bill or a utility service bill where you demonstrate and show what we've delivered to you by way of services and how much you've utilized. And we talk through whether next year you should be utilizing the same services or if the agency is getting the big bang for the buck for the services that we're paying for now. So I see it evolving to more of a partnership between IT and the customers versus just IT running one side and the customers tossing requirements across the fence for them to deliver to them.
I'm interested in the cost recovery model because a lot of times people don't think of the CIO in that manner. The CIO provides services and there's a line item to your budget, and it goes back to the budget question I think we talked about a little bit earlier. So how does it work? Do you say to organization X, we think you're going to have to give us X amount of dollars for this year to for your IT services, or is it a monthly fee and versus just a line item in the FDA overall budget that says for technology it's going to be, you know, so many hundred million dollars?
Well, you think of it as you're going to submit an order. You're going to ask us to give you the most for that order that you have in your wallet. We're going to bring back proposals for you to react to, and you're going to select and tell us if those services will fit your needs. And that's the operational model that we're going to at IT. I believe that any CIO who comes in to take the job will enjoy this relationship because it gives them more clarity on what to deliver by way of services, more clarity and buy-in from the customers, more stabilized budgets, because if when we do this model and it matures to where we want it to go, the requirements for what you want a year before would have already been established. So the CIO then works with his team to go out and procure those services or create the plans for delivering those services versus, you know, every year not realizing or knowing what it is you're going to have to deliver and how you're going to find funding to do it with. And so I think this gets us out in front of needs. We're becoming proactive with our budget planning versus reactive to it.
All right, but that begs the question of what happens if all of a sudden your friends in Congress say, hey, the FDA now has to do this, whatever this is. How do you make sure that there's money for that? Because you're almost asking to plan, do you need a new car this year, or do you need a new car next year, or do you need a new car in 5 years? And then all of a sudden you get into an accident and you need a new car today. How do you plan for that?
Well, clearly we would then have the information in front of us to be able to make adjustments we have to make. But it also helps us not to just inform our customers. It also helps us to inform Congress about here are the investments as we have proposed them to date, and your request comes in this form. And so we've looked at everything we can look at, and we've made adjustments the best we could. Now we need your support to move it a bit further. So it's a two-way street. It's not only for our customers, it's also to better inform the appropriators who take good care of us financially of what we need additionally should we fall short of based on their request.
All right, very good. That's a great model, I think, in many regards because of two reasons. Number one, it's being proactive, so you're looking into the future. You're not just always putting out the fire for today. And then people understand what they're getting for whatever they're paying for, where the money is going. So I think that's a model that I wouldn't be surprised to see kind of grow throughout the government. Are you seeing that model anywhere else in government?
Well, I've not seen it in many places. I've seen it implemented, and I've been to a couple of government agencies that have implemented a model that works very similar, but I mostly have operated this type of model in the private sector, but it works in government. If we simply have the requirements well documented, we have transparent processes, we clearly listen to what the customers want, we give them transparent responses back. And sometimes, by the way, transparency does not necessarily mean good news, it means real news. And so I think those conversations help us to understand how to better serve our customers, and it helps them to better understand what are they getting and what they really need.
All right, very nice. I think that's it's a very interesting model. I'd like to see how you guys deal with it, and then if it can spread across government. My guest today is Walt Harris, the FDA's Chief Operating Officer and Acting Chief Information Officer. I'm Jason Miller. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest today is Walt Harris, the Food and Drug Administration's Chief Operating Officer and Acting CIO. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Walt, before break, we were talking a lot about your office setup. And one of the things you mentioned about the new Chief Informatics Officer is Open FDA. And I definitely want to tag back and come back around to that because I think it's a fascinating initiative, and I've done a little bit of research about it. So talk about that, and then take us into your priorities. What are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
Oh, we'll start with Open FDA. Open FDA is FDA's ability to share information in an uninhibited forum with those outside of the agency. And it's important to remember that the data we share is commonly understood information that's been out there for a while. We've just created a structure and a repository that allows people to easily come in and navigate and extract what they want. One example would be, you want to find out the ingredients in aspirin and you want to find out recall information on it. You come into our database and we already have folks out there who created a scanning tool that allows them to bar scan a bottle of aspirin and then automatically retrieve information from our database. That's pretty nifty. I think it's also important to note that the data we've set up now, instead of coming into 5 different ways of retrieving information about, adverse events or impacts based on drugs or devices, they now come into a single line, which is Open FDA, type in the search words they need, and it actually goes out and grabs information from all places and brings it back to a central way for them to bring it back to and create a tool, and then they can manipulate that data to help them resolve issues outside of the agency, which I think is phenomenal. And so Open FDA is a breakthrough for us, and that FDA is no longer seen as a set of high walls that people can't get into and extract information from. We've provided a free form of data that they can come in and extract from our data and create helpful information for them out in the areas that they focused on. So I think it's an important effort.
Now, I know there's a lot of pressure on agencies from the White House around open data, transparency. Was there an impetus beyond that pressure to do this? I mean, did you have external customers coming to you going, if we can only have this specific type of data or this is so hard to find, help me find it, why can't you guys make it easier? Was that what really pushed you forward?
I think it was a combination of all the above. Pressure from our leadership to become more transparent with data. Also, mega requirements for those on the outside trying to figure out ways that we can share data without exposing the wrong things and how they could help us help themselves and others. And so this is an important relationship, and OpenFDA does just that.
Now, it's only been out there for, a few months now, if that?
Right. Mm-hmm.
What kind of reaction are you seeing? Are you seeing a lot of apps building? I like the one you mentioned, you could just scan the barcode and find out, retrieve the information about the aspirin. What other apps are you seeing? How much uptick are you getting?
To date, 4 apps have been built that will allow people to extract information and recreate scenarios and trends that they can share with others. Even, I think it's important to note that, this could also one day potentially turn to a self-help type of activity to where, you know, Junkie Public could then look at our data and try to figure out maybe what their reaction is to, I don't know, an aspirin or some other type of drug or device. And so we see this as a growing piece. It's in its infant stage now. Since its launch in the summer, there's been more than 4.5 million API calls and over 20,000 connected internet devices and more than 40,000 unique visitors to the openfda.gov site. And so we feel that it's rolling out quite well. And this initiative it also highlights projects that use this data in both public and private sectors to further regulatory or scientific missions, educate the public, and save lives. So we're happy to see that new apps are being developed and research queries around the clock are really happening well. So we think it's a success.
All right. Well, that's good news. Obviously, getting people to pick up and know it's there and use it is half the battle sometimes. And once you get enough people understanding what's available, that's when you really see the uptick. Now, that leads us down the path of other priorities. Obviously, cloud, mobility, big data, cybersecurity, all those are the key buzzwords for any CIO. Just give me a sense, what are you trying to get done now that you got the reorganization of your OIMT set up? Where are you going next with your priorities?
Well, this is a very exciting time for FDA. You know, as we mentioned with the cloud, you know, FDA is transitioning into cloud in a hybrid approach, looking at infrastructure, platforms, even software as a service for our centers and offices. Now, we just talked about open to FDA, but, you know, naturally, when data scales this large, we fully intend to continue to advance our leveraging big data technologies and services in a scalable environment such as the cloud, so that the scale of our infrastructure, search, and compute environments are not bottlenecked to the scale of our regulatory or scientific research. So the way to create these lanes so where they can pump separately but yet pull from the same places without bottleneck is important. We are also looking to integrate our mobile platform. From where we stand, mobility is being able to do your work from anywhere, regardless of the device itself. So we've been working closely with our centers and various stakeholders in the government and from industry and on how best to approach this. And we have a mobility strategy in place and have executed on its priorities based on the need. For example, tablets and smartphones are first to be piloted. And soon we're going to be rolling out in a phased approach all across FDA, these various types of smartphones to do various types of work with. And having said all that, it's important that we keep security and privacy in mind, which is a component of our model moving forward. Another key issue to remember is that we are a regulatory agency. Privacy to us means everything, ensuring that proprietary information is secure and is protected appropriately.
All right, so a couple of interesting things going on there. Let me move back to cloud. You said you're transitioning to a hybrid approach. When we say hybrid, are we talking about a government cloud and a commercial cloud, or are you talking about more of a public cloud that maybe like Amazon or Google or Microsoft that actually mixes data, so to speak? And I know that's a dirty word, but where your data is not kind of cordoned off in the government-only cloud.
Correct. We're talking about the private cloud and the public cloud. So we want to be able to share information freely, but at the same time, protect, for example, trade secret information, do applications information on folks who send applications in for us to review. So we have a tough mission to juggle, but we believe if we go with the hybrid approach, we can satisfy the needs of the public and we can satisfy the needs of our industry partners to make sure that everything is secure with their data, while at the same time sharing common information with those who need it to help themselves.
And what's the status of that effort? Is there an RFP on the way? Has already one out there? Have you made a contract award? Should people expect one?
Yeah, I think people should expect that we will be moving aggressively in the next fiscal year with our cloud strategy, so that there is a time frame for us to be looking very aggressively in new fiscal year 2015.
All right. So people will, I'm sure, now bug you about that, so you can blame me when those vendors start calling you and they want to tell you how great they are. The other piece you've talked about was mobility and some pilots that are kicking off. You said first with smartphones, maybe then to tablets. Are you looking at all kinds of smartphones, or are you focused on one specific variety, whether it's an iPhone or a Windows or a Droid of some sort? Give me a sense of that smartphone pilot.
We're looking at a variety of smartphones and tablets, but at the end of the business day, we want to think that we can have an environment set up in such a fashion that we can even bring your own device into the environment. But first, we're going to a phased approach. We're starting out with smartphones. We're looking at various types, iPhones. We're looking at Droids. So we want to have our platform be a very variable platform. And then we want our tablets to be such to where if one day we think we can have the industry agree to having tablets to conduct inspections where it is safe and secure, we want those tablets, various forms of tablets to be put out there. But ultimately, if the agency is to become more efficient, we want to be able to have an environment that's secure enough and stable enough that we can even support bringing your own devices.
I know that the BYOD, a lot of agencies are very scared off by that idea of BYOD.
Absolutely.
It's actually great to see that you guys are saying this is the maybe the longer term goal, but we know it's, we got to get there.
We have to get there.
One thing about the smartphone pilot, can you give me a little more information about it in terms of, are you talking about a couple hundred people, a couple thousand people? What are they going to be used for? Give me more sense of that pilot program.
Phase one will have us looking at about approximately 1,000 staff members from various places across the agency, you know, slowly migrating into the smartphones. We will have a little more control over what types of apps are on those smartphones so we can make sure that they're stable, that we're doing the right things with them, and that people are really using the tools the way they should be used. Phase two, we begin to add a little more functionality to it, and we bring more people onto it to make sure that we are getting everyone acclimated to the way we're going. And so we don't want to wait until any form of technology has left us before we start working on the research and development for our new way forward. And so we will start about 1,000 in phase one, and then we will slowly build, because FDA is almost 16,000 people. And so we want to slowly walk into this so we can make sure that the agency can acclimate and adjust to it, because this is a new way of doing business. And then when we talk about phase three, which is trying to build the platform larger enough so that we can do these large field inspections, et cetera, we want to make sure that industry understands that, you know, how we're going to help them out and do the job better for them and how we're going to do inspections, et cetera. And so we have to slowly build into this process. But it's important to know that our ability to have folks who work out in the field operate just as efficiently as those who work at headquarters is important. We believe that if our platforms are up and stable enough and that we put the right devices into play, we put the right platforms and infrastructure into place, our job is to make sure that we're taking care of the public's health and serving our energy partners in a manner that's efficient and expedient. And we believe that mobile technology is one way to get us there.
Talking about the 16,000 FDA employees, I imagine a good percentage are work in the field. They're not in the office day in and day out with inspections, investigations, and scientific research. Are you finding, are they clamoring for smartphones and tablets to be able to use in their day-to-day work? And how do you kind of balance that need with this pilot program that could, you know, potentially to them could be a slow roll?
I think they're really thirsty for more creative and innovative ways to do their jobs. I think I can tell you one thing I've learned in my 2.5 years at FDA is that every employee I've ever met, very dedicated to the mission. And it is our responsibility as an agency to provide them with the infrastructure and tools they need to efficiently do the work. And so I think those two pieces are forefront in what we're trying to accomplish here, making sure that our staff have the tools they need to do the job effectively, and making sure that we're servicing the customers, both internal and external, in an efficient manner.
One thing about the current process, is it all paper and pen, or is it you go back and put stuff in a laptop? How mobile is it today, that process for the field workers?
I think they're mobile, but it's the type of mobile devices they're using. I think they're fairly antiquated and maybe fairly overly bulky. Now, but the biggest issue we want to resolve is having our field staff have almost instantaneous connection into providing information back to the program office or center they're providing data for by way of an inspection. I think it's important that we have that. Now, it seems like we're just trying to resolve the FDA problem, but we're really trying to resolve the way to expediently review and approve applications for our clients and the industry by having our field-based units with almost immediate connections. When they do an inspection, information comes back in a quicker manner that is more reliable and accurate, and that center or program office receives it then, and they can make processes for reviewing applications, drugs, devices a bit faster, a bit more accurate, and a bit more in tune with the timelines of our industry partners.
And really, in the end, what you're saying just there is the end goal for every CIO, every agency, more efficiently, more effective, and of course, less expensive and more
correct
customer service. Let's take a quick break. My guest today is Walt Harris, the Food and Drug Administration's Chief Operating Officer and Acting CIO. I'm Jason Miller. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest today is Walt Harris, the Food and Drug Administration's Chief Operating Officer and Acting Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Walt, before break, we're talking a lot about your priorities. You mentioned mobility. You mentioned cloud. One thing that's you got to talk about when you bring up mobility, when you bring up cloud, is cybersecurity. And we're going to talk a little bit about employees and accessing information in a minute. But first, let me go back to mobility for a second. How are you dealing with mobility and security together? Because those two have got to come, you know, hand in hand as you go forward with these pilots.
So I'll step back to open data for a second and give you maybe that'll help to draw a picture around this. I mean, so the larger picture is that OpenFDA does serve as a catalyst for big data and analytics. Now, the platforms we're pulling together, again, it does separate the public cloud interactions with our private clouds we're trying to establish. And it does kind of dovetail into some of the security issues that we face. I mean, cybersecurity is an essential component in protecting FDA against threats designed to impede our mission. And so to strengthen that, you know, we've spent the past year increasing oversight and tightening the controls governing access to electronically stored information. We're placing greater emphasis on privacy while ensuring our security teams have the tools and access necessary to provide the vast quantity of sensitive and confidential data housed within FDA. But nonetheless, FDA takes seriously the responsibility to safeguard all potential whistleblowers and their rights under the law. I mean, some ways in which we've tried to strike the appropriate balance are as follows. The searches must be documented and approved. Any search must be narrowly tailored and reasonable in scope. And in some instances, a committee consisting of various types of skill sets across the agency to include, you know, chief counsel, the chief operating officer, human resources, the IT community in some ways have to be established to make sure that we're looking at the right things, following the right processes, and respecting the rights and laws of our employees. If the protected communications are discovered, for example, our staff knows that when they encounter protected information, they are to notify my office immediately as the chief operating officer. We should bring the chief counsel into the table and talk these things through. And if appropriate, we filter or pull together a filter or taint team. That is when we feel that information has been brought to the forefront. A taint team is established to look at this data to make sure that we are, again, following the laws for employee protection rights and whistleblower protection rights to make sure that protected classes are not infringed upon. And so we've spent the last year really, really tightening up security rules and policies at the agency.
Let me make sure I want to clarify one thing. You said if someone should notify you about a whistleblower complaint or some issue, you bring in the chief counsel and then you create, I'm sorry, a tank team?
It's just what attorneys call a filter or tank team, which means information has been exposed and it needs to be looked at by the right eyes and the right people to determine what our next steps will be.
This is a new concept for FDA, or is this something you've always had but you've strengthened it and gave it more prominence?
I think FDA has always had it. We've just strengthened it now. We think that bringing the right skill sets and the right processes to the table helps the agency stays in line with what the law says.
One of the reasons we're talking about this is came under scrutiny from Congress, from others over the last year in terms of employees accessing information that they're supposed to and oversight over confidential data. How much has that changed, that scrutiny? How much has that changed the FDA for the better?
Well, it didn't take the Hill testimonies for us to change that. We, as a result of many things that have occurred over the years, we felt it was necessary to sit down and look at our policies, look at our processes, talk to our teams who actually operate in these various areas, and to make sure that the right people are informed or in the know or understand what the requests are before these things take place. And so I think the checks and balances are in place now. I think that we have, I'm confident that we have everyone who operate in these certain lanes educated to the point where they understand how the process works, and the right people are, again, in the know and understand what the process and requests are. We didn't have them as clarified as we do now, but we feel very confident that we have the processes and the policies in place that helps us to properly govern that.
Let me back us up for a second. When I started the question, I was asking about cybersecurity as it relates to mobility and cloud. I know you talked a little bit about it, but from a mobility standpoint, since you have this pilot launching, are you guys looking to put in place, for instance, a mobile device management solution or some other type of software solution to help manage and protect the data and the devices?
Absolutely. We are looking at that. And one of the reasons we developed Dr. Taha's office is for the innovation lane to test and look at and do market research on all those things to make sure that we consider not only the devices and the various types of data and the ability to be free roaming when it comes to mobility. We think that the number one issue that we need to address is to make sure that our environment is secure, that we have clear policies and directives on how we operate these devices, how they interact with our customers, the way they interact with our industry partners. And so we are thinking a long line of that. But what is different at FDA now that has not been in place since before I got there, I'm assuming, is that we have now an innovation lane that really does look at the end-to-end piece of it from, if you will, the recipe card creation. We create the initial recipe card in innovation, but to explode that card, we need to have all the parts and pieces recognized so that when we do make it a commodity product, we're rolling it out in a similar fashion and everyone is running it and operating it the same way. But if we do it in a disparate fashion, we lose control of how the agency should effectively use these devices. So we are looking at the various types of tools that we need and governance structure we need to properly implement this type of program.
one interesting conversation that I was a part of about a week or two or three ago now about shadow IT. It's a little separate from what we're talking about here, cybersecurity, but I think the relationship is, as you talk about the policies in place, the governance, the standards, you know, make sure everyone's heading down the same path. So there's not this, in words of shadow IT or rogue IT. Is that something that you're seeing? You're going to offer a set of kind of shared services, and then the offices that fall within the FDA maybe can focus on mission area services that as long as they meet the standards and requirements. So there's business and commodity versus, you know, kind of mission area. Are you guys separating them, or is your office, the innovation office, the CIO office, really holding the line saying this is the path we're all heading down the same?
That's exactly right. We're clearly sharing the risk. We want to have our centers have some autonomy as it relates to their unique tools required for them to run their business. For platforming, some software as a service, the infrastructure design as a service, we feel that IT should manage and provide those services to the centers as long as you correctly stated, that they meet the standards that we've put out as the gold standards to follow within the agency. So I think what is well received by the program offices at FDA is that we are looking at this as a collaborative partnership, and that we do want them to have some autonomy in the specific tools they use. For example, you know, a drug tool for evaluations is totally different than a device tool. It's totally different than a biologics tool. So we couldn't expect them to all look alike as it relates to the tools and software they need to manage their business. But we do think that their underlying technology that supports them should be similar. Our infrastructure should be the same. The platforming should be very similar. You know, that helps us to really maximize our investments and decrease unnecessary costs associated with rendering our services.
Unfortunately, though, we are out of time. My guest today was Walt Harris, the Food and Drug Administration's Chief Operating Officer and Acting CIO. I'm Jason Miller. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Walt, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
No, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website. Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.